All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks, what the fucksters? How's it going? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. It's the one that you like. It's the podcast that you like. How are you? Is everything all right with that thing on your butt? Huh? Did you get that thing fixed? The thing you were talking about? I don't know how you're driving it if you didn't get it fixed. I don't know how you're riding it if you didn't get it fixed. What are you going to do? Wait for something terrible to happen? Get on it. Hey, congratulations. 2 days sober is great. 3 days sober is great. 5 days sober is great. 30 days sober, congratulations. Hey, just be nice. Go apologize. Go fucking apologize. Now, go get your fucking shine box. Look, I'm the guy. I'm the guy. I guess I'm finally where I always wanted to be. I'm the chronically brokenhearted fuck who spends his life doing comedy. Finally, I didn't think it would happen. I thought, like, you know, the podcast is great, and, you know, I'm glad I'm making some money doing comedy, and I'm glad I got an audience for my comedy, and I'm happy to perform for the people. But back when I was a younger man, I thought, what has to happen for me just to go all in a way, with my heart and soul and mind and everything else, into just being a real fucking comic? And I figured back then, well, I mean, something's got to crush you. Something's got to take it out of you. Something's got to, you know, just kill something inside of you. Yeah, finally, I'm that guy. I'm the chronically brokenhearted guy that goes out there and opens up for the strangers, lets them in, and then leaves and feels satisfied in his hotel room 90% of the time. Finally, all my dreams are coming true. Today on the show, Jesus Trejo, who's a young comic who can only look forward to what I just talked to you about. He's touring a lot. I met him at the Comedy Store. He used to work the lot and work the door, and now he's a paid regular over there, and he has a show on the First We Feast YouTube channel called Tacos Con Todo, and I'm on the latest episode. You know, I got to be honest with you. I'm not a huge California Mexican food dude. I guess it's because I grew up in New Mexico. I don't know. But, you know, I'll eat just about anything once or nine times or for my entire life. It's hard to know what that's going to be. Lately, I've been craving Asian soups. And that's new, but I think it's a carb hookup with the noodles. I think secretly, I've always been afraid of pasta because of the carbs. But for some reason, I think if the noodles are an Asian soup, they're not the same kind of carbs. It's just a bowl full of pasta, which is not fucking true. But I did the Tacos Con Todo, and we went to this place that's kind of in this garage space next to a factory that stonewashes blue jeans. And this guy makes the best goat tacos, some sort of goat preparation. And he's just doing it there until he runs out. I think he's got a deal going with the guy that runs the factory that stonewashes pants, which we took a tour of for the show. We weren't supposed to be in there, but we just saw these vats and big containers full of like pumice rock, and they really do actually stonewash the jeans. But this place does it on a big scale for big companies, and it's not a great looking factory. It does not look safe in any way, and neither do the tacos, to be honest with you. But I ate them. I ate some goat tacos, and I ate some goat spinal cord, and I ate goat with gravy on it on a tortilla, and I did all that stuff for Jesus because he wanted me to, and I like him. And he was one of those guys who I just saw all of a sudden, anyways, to me, pop and become funny right before my very eyes. Did I mention I'm the chronically brokenhearted guy out there on the road pretending like he doesn't have a broken heart, entertaining the people? That's me, finally. I made it. Where's the sad guy? Nope, not sad. It's so not true. I am so far into the sadness in the bits. It's amazing. And these people are amazing too. These lucky people who are able to engage in the pre-sale right now for all of these new dates. The password is TIME, T-I-M-E. General admission tickets go on sale tomorrow, Friday, June 3rd. For these dates, are you ready? Indianapolis, Indiana on Friday, August 5th at the Old National Theater. Louisville, Kentucky on Saturday, August 6th at the Beaumard Theater. Yeah, let's say it like that. Lincoln, Nebraska on Thursday, August 18th at the Rococo Theater. Des Moines, Iowa on Friday, August 19th at Hoyt Sherman Place. Iowa City on Saturday, August 20th at the Englert Theater. Tucson, Arizona on Friday, September 16th at the Rialto Theater. Phoenix, Arizona on Saturday, September 17th at Stand Up Live. And Boulder, Colorado on Thursday, September 22nd at the Boulder Theater. The Phoenix ones are on sale now. No pre-sale on that one. And also, I'm going to be in Vegas next month. Go to WTFpod.com/tour for all of these links to all of these dates. And the pre-sale is currently happening. The password is time. And I will bring my chronically broken heart, stifled bullshit right to your town. You want in? Do you want in? It's watermelon time. Here's what's going on. You know, it's the drought is very frightening out here in California. Fires are very frightening. I've talked about this before, and I realize, like, how much time do I have to get out? You see, what's going to happen is we're all going to need to leave the West Coast. And the West Coast, according to some on the, you know, the more radicalized right-wingy types, we're the problem, the elitist, progressive, liberal Jews of whatnot. And by the way, woke means Jew. By the way, big pharma, Jew. By the way, socialist, Jew. But here's the point. Whether we are those things or not, Jews or not, progressives or not, Democrats or not, is eventually climate change is going to force a migration. Now, the way things are going now in this, what they call the, it's not a democracy, according to the ultra-right people. It's a constitutional republic. So I imagine at some point the Midwest is going to balkanize into something that is against the rest of the world. Some sort of, I've talked about this before, I think some sort of Christian fascist rape culture forced birth shit show. And it's starting to feel to me like, you know, right around the time we're going to have to get out of the West Coast and the Western states because of drought and fire and everything else and migrate inland. They might close off their boundaries to the new country within the Midwest, and we're gonna have to fight it out, and that's gonna be weird. We're gonna have civil wars over water within the country. That's I'm prophesizing, but this is also maybe advanced cue. I don't know. I'm making it up as I go along, but what I'm saying is maybe it's time for all of us progressives and radicals and Jews and Democrats of all kinds, all the people, trans people, all of us, the big tent, to just sort of quickly and rapidly move inland and just start offering people in Arkansas and Idaho and not Idaho so much, maybe Oklahoma and Kansas, just offering them money for their houses and moving in. That'll change the political profile of the state. Just the mass migration of progressives into the Midwest before they close down the border and we become two countries. Anyway, just speculating, just thinking out loud. I got my sprinklers fixed. I'm trying to comply. And I don't know. It's just so fucking sad. Because, like, I know what's going on, you know, and I know it's, you know, I don't want to use too much water, but I also want to enjoy my yard. And that might mean I have to leave. I have to leave. There's no reason I can't enjoy my yard. The only reason is because I live in a state that's got no water and it's about to all be on fire. I got to get out. I got to get out before they close the border of Oklahoma. Listen, Jesus Trejo is here. The episode of Tacos Con Todo that I'm on, you can watch it now at the First We Feast YouTube channel. And I like this kid. I like this kid. He's coming up. So what happened? You were what did you do? You were at CBS? What happened?
Yeah, I had a meeting. It was a notes meeting. I got this project brewing.
Oh yeah.
You know, we sold the project and
yeah,
we're getting notes and then getting ready to take it out wide.
Oh, so it's a project?
Yeah, it's
is it a sitcom?
Yeah, a sitcom.
For you?
Yeah, for me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That was loaded. That was a loaded. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's still happening. You went out there and you sold a little show.
Yeah, man. I'm just trying, you know, just enjoying comedy and just putting stuff on paper to see if people like it. And if not, you keep creating.
So, what was the process? Is this your first deal?
We had taken out some stuff, but this is the first one where...
We as in you and who?
I co-wrote it with Caesar, one of the... So he's a he's the only Latino writer on The Simpsons.
And oh, yeah.
We're co... taking this thing out, and it's been great. It's, you know, yeah. So,
this is your time, man.
Hopefully, we'll see. I mean, we'll see. We'll see how the cookie crumbles, but, you know, just excited and putting in the work. And
so what was the process? What'd you do? You wrote a script, or you just got an idea?
Pitch. Yeah, we put a pitch together. We went different production companies.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Cloud Nine, you know, the idea really resonated with them.
Oh,
and
so they're a production company.
A production company.
Got it.
So,
yeah.
So, and they have a first look with CBS, and, you know, we got paired up, Caesar and I, and we really hit it off. You know, it's like, you know, only child's, grew up in a very similar family dynamic.
Oh, yeah.
And we put this thing together, and you know, the project Inner Child is the running title of it right now.
Oh, yeah.
And
so he had a deal with CBS?
No, Cloud Nine did.
Oh, but so Caesar, you didn't know him, though? They put him
No. Yeah, they introduced us. Well, it's funny because I met him years before. I went in an audition for a project that he had called High and Mighty.
Uh-huh.
And,
That he had written.
Yeah, yeah. Directed the whole shebang.
Yeah.
Went out, auditioned, met him there. So when we met in the room, Cloud Nine put us together.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, you look familiar. You look familiar. And we kind of look... kind of the same. It's like an NFT variant, you know, yeah, where it's the same thing. That's what it's like. We're both NFT variants of each other. And it just clicked, and we were able to really bring some stuff to paper, and we want to take it out to streaming services like a Netflix, Hulu, Amazon.
Okay. So what is the show that I did that's yours, the taco show? How does that work?
Man, Tacos con Todo, which, by the way, thank you for doing it. When I was in the parking lot, I remember walking into the store, and you walk by, and you're like, I think I'm doing that thing. I said, wow, thank you so much, Mark. And I couldn't believe it, and it meant the world. This is Tacos con Todo. It's, you know, we have it over at... First We Feast Complex.
What is that?
First We Feast is so they do hot ones.
Okay.
So they have a
have
ton
you
of
been on that show?
No.
Huh.
No, I not yet.
I've never been on that show. That's where you eat the pepper?
The wings, and each wing gets gradually hotter, and they ask you hot questions.
Right.
Yeah, so...
I don't know why they never asked me to be on it.
Oh, I'm sure they want to have you on
you
it.
You think so?
Yeah, we didn't think you were going to do Tacos con Todo. Yeah, I mean, so it's like they would love to have you over there, believe me. And so this show, we're on the third season. Justin Bolus, who's an amazing... I mean, I tell him all the time, he's a genius. He's now the VP over at... First We Feast, and he's amazing. He's all things food. He's dialed in.
Yeah.
And I guess he had saw a podcast that I had done with Bobby Lee.
Yeah.
And reached out. We had meetings and that kind of thing. So they already had this IP and this idea, and it's like, would you like to host it? I'm like, I've never hosted anything. Way to like block my blessings. You know, as I say that in a meeting, I've never hosted before.
I don't know how to do any of that. Yeah.
That's the self-sabotaging aspect of the comic. You know,
or honesty.
Yeah. Honesty. Yeah. That's one way to look at it. And, he was just very kind. He really understood, the angle that I brought to the table, and I love his work.
Which was what? You know tacos?
I'm a guy with a belly, so that's my credential, I guess. I
got. But is the whole show tacos?
So it's basically eating foods. Like, we basically map out all the great taco spots that are popping up everywhere, from trucks to backyard speakeasies.
So
across
it's all tacos.
Tacos, and then I get to talk to comedians who I'm friends with.
Eating
fans
tacos.
Of eating tacos.
Now, let me just ask you now, because I was trying to figure it out. So, tell me what I ate.
You ate birria, which is goat meat.
Right. I don't mind goat. I've eaten Arab goat before, Indian goat, maybe some Greek goat. This is the first, I think, Mexican goat I've eaten.
Yeah, this is, so there's been a big birria craze in LA.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I am not on the pulse. I didn't know there was a big goat craze going on.
Well, I think food trucks and tacos now is like are having a big moment.
Right.
And it's like, you know, in that area where you went to go eat birria.
Yeah, where was that?
That was in Boyle Heights.
Okay.
Yeah, right in front of the projects right there.
Right.
Great area of like just so many food trucks. And so the one that we took you to was...
It was in a factory, I think.
Yeah. So we took you to one of the best spots. It's not even a birria taco, which is what's popular right now. Yeah. They make it in a taco. They put cheese. This is out of the oven. Yeah. Consomme, which is a, like, you know, kind of the soup that came with it.
Yeah.
And but that's the most authentic style of birria you could possibly have. And I just thought it was so great to put you in that space, because it's like this guy, Hector, is like blowing up because he does such an authentic recipe and the food is so great.
Can he handle the orders? Does he get, I mean
scarcity.
Just,
I mean,
it just goes until it runs out.
It goes until it runs out. He opens at 8. He's done by 11.
Yeah.
Probably even earlier. But this guy started in a garage. So this guy works next door at a denim.
I know. We went in there. That was crazy. We're in this space in like a, it's not even a parking lot. It's like in between buildings.
Yeah.
And then there's a denim factory where if they don't make denim, they stonewash it.
Yeah.
It's only, it, that's all they do at that place is stonewash shit.
Yeah.
And we went in there and it was like, it was probably not safe.
No, not at all. We didn't have a hard hat. We didn't have anything. We didn't, the lights weren't even on.
I know. It's great. But he works there.
Yeah, he works there. So the owner of the factory, you know, allowed him to kind of set up shop in this alleyway kind of garage.
Did he take a cut, that guy?
I'm sure he does. I mean, it's LA, baby.
Is he family, though?
I think so. I think they might be related in some way, but, you know, he works there during the week. On Saturdays only, he's able to set up shop.
Yeah.
And the through, like, the connector here was, like, how great would it be to bring in Marc Maron, who started in a garage and had this great podcast blow up from there, much like this man who started in a garage, is still there, but is getting write-ups left and right on...
I don't think I'd ever had it before. It was all very exciting.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The spinal cord part was my favorite.
That wasn't great.
Oh, it wasn't. Tell me what was going through your mind as we're eating this, because I'm so curious.
No, I'll eat anything. I don't give a shit, man. I'll try everything. But I thought it was good. But I remember the spinal cord part, because it looks like spinal cord.
Oh, yeah.
And that, why was that your best part? You like it?
I mean, it's part of the thing. It's kind of like a mixture of stuff. And I see you kind of picking at it, and you looked over at me, and you're like, God dang it, Jesus. Like, why'd you bring here? Yeah. That look is like,
Yeah, because of the spinal cord. That's what you wanted. You got what you wanted.
No, that wasn't it. That happened to be on there. But it was just, I mean, I was blown away that you would say yes and you would come out. I mean,
come on, dude. Yeah. That's all right. I'm a fan. I'll do things occasionally. Yeah. You know, I mean, I've watched you, like, I remember, like, because I go to the store, I've been going there on and off for however long.
Since 87.
Since that when?
Since 87, right?
Yeah. But I mean, but like, since you've been there, when did you get there?
I got there like around 2009 or 10.
Really?
Yeah, because I got past September 7, 2012.
With Adam or Tommy?
Through Tommy.
Yeah?
Yeah, through Tommy.
So when did I get back? I mean, I was around. Yeah, I mean, I was around. So I saw you since when you were like a baby comic.
Oh, yeah, for sure you did.
Like, when did you, like, what were you, door lock guy?
I did a little bit of everything, but mostly it was a lot. You know, they stuck me in the lot. I worked everything. I did phones. At the time, remember, the bathroom used to be kind of facing the OR. The doors were kind of by
the... Right, and the phone was there. The payphone.
Oh, the payphone. That's right. So I those bathrooms used to clog up a lot. So Adam was the GM at the time, Adam Egitt.
Yeah.
And, you know, every so often I'd work the back door and he'd be like, hey, man, you got to go unclog these toilets. And there were overflow and there was floaties and I'm kicking a turd down the hallway.
Oh my God.
I did everything there because I knew it was a opportunity for me to go there. And it was like tuition to learn.
I guess it's so funny because like I used to think that way too, you know, and I did. and I do because I did it. You know, I was a door guy. But then, like, I heard Chappelle talking about, I can't remember where he was talking about it, but when they, you know, when he found out that there were comics working those jobs, he's like, what?
Yeah.
Why would you do that? Like, I never really thought about it like that. Because, like, either you buy into the store or you don't, right? So there are people that come in there and they're just sort of like, I just want to do comedy. And she's like, well, you know, you got to work the door. And they're like, fuck you. I'm going to go. But for me, I was like, all right, I'll just live at this place.
Yeah, I'm no stranger to hard work, and I knew that if I could put in some sweat equity into the place, I was going to be a part of the place and really learn about it. So it was, I took on any shift that I could, from seating, you know, lot, phones, maintenance. I mean,
now, was Mitzi was she conscious when you were there, when you got there?
So Mitzi wasn't involved in a day-to-day business, but I did get to meet her because I toured with Pauly quite a bit. You know,
you know,
over the years, I met him there at the parking lot. And one of the really cool things—
Hey, buddy.
Dude, Jose Trejos. He called me. He still calls me Jose to this day. I don't think he knows my real name. No, he's great.
Jose Trejos.
But when we would come back from, like, touring, he did this really cool thing that I'm so grateful for. It's like, he let me go buy a Christmas tree, and I get to go set it up at Mitzi's place on Doheny.
Yeah.
And I'd set it up, and she'd be there, and— You know,
Christmas for the Jews.
Yeah, it was it was great. I mean, and you know, no more than a couple words of exchanging back and forth. I kind of kept to myself, but I set up the tree, and it was just, to me, it was, you hear this legend of Mitzi, like the Mother Teresa of comedy, kind of like, oof. And I was able to see her there live. You know?
Live, putting her tree in her house.
Yeah, it was great.
She's looking at you confused.
I didn't speak much to her. I kept to myself, but the act of that tree was, it meant the world to me. You know?
Just love that the old Jewish lady's got a Christmas tree. They're like, that guy named Jesus is setting up in her living room, and she barely knows what day it is. It's a beautiful image. Polly's a character. So like, when did, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Long Beach, Eastside Long Beach. Born and raised.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So like, what was that? When? How old are you now?
I'm 35. Born in 86, the year 86. Before you started at the store.
That's your point of reference?
Yeah, point of reference.
So how big a family?
Interesting. So I'm only child between my mom and dad.
Yeah.
But I do have a pretty big, I have half siblings.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
They were both married before? After.
Kind of interesting. This is a juicy part here. Yeah. The real spinal cord of the conversation.
Yeah.
So my mom and dad are not married to each other.
Right.
You know, so my dad is married or was married so he had another family in Mexico essentially.
Okay.
And my mom—
Did your mom know that?
I think so. I didn't know that. I was late to the party. So it was like a slow reveal over the years. And it was like, I started putting two and two together. I'm
really?
Like, this is gnarly.
Wait, so your dad's living here, but he's legal, right?
So he's an American citizen now. But so he came to the country to work, meets mom. My dad's a gardener, construction worker, did construction during the week up in like Palos Verdes.
Yeah.
And did gardening work up there and, around town. So my mom cleaned houses and she was a nanny. So I like to say that my parents met on the circuit. All the people that would go up the hill into Palos Verdes to work. So they met each other and one thing led to another. And then I'm here. And then it's like, dad has another family.
Really?
Yeah. And
was he sending money back or how did it work?
No, he was going like for years. He would go during Christmas to spend time with his family. So dad was gone during the holidays and he'd come back early in the following year.
And you didn't know?
I put two and two together. And
how old were you?
Eventually I'm like, so that's why mom cries. I thought mom was a party pooper trying to ruin Christmas. And it's like, I get it, ma.
But she's got other kids too?
No, I'm my mother's only child.
Oh.
But dad has family out there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Have you met him?
I did through, like, here and there. It's like there was a brother.
Where's your dad now?
He's here. Yeah, the whole squad's here. Mom, dad, and I. So
you met him? What do you mean you met him?
I had met a brother, a half-brother of mine, when I was younger, and I didn't know the context or who he was. And then he went back. Then he came out here for a little bit, stayed with us, and then... I'm a slow learner, Mark.
Yeah.
So eventually I'm like, you're a half sibling, right? And then during COVID, there was a situation that happened and came down here. Like in 2020, height of 2020, I would say like height of pandemic, maybe like it was the summer. So maybe August.
Yeah.
They came down and I got to meet them all. And they're like, again, NFT versions of like my dad. I'm like, this mustache, but in a different way. Right. You know,
it's
slightly taller dad. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, a chunky younger dad.
Yeah.
You know, it's a... And so brothers and sisters.
How many?
Four that I know of.
That you,
yeah, so
you can't get information.
I mean, it's a need to know basis. I think is what my dad. He's slow rolling me with this stuff. I guess it's complicated, but it's.
But you're 35. Can he come clean on that?
I'm not old enough to know yet. I mean, no, I'm playing. There'll come a time when I'm mature enough to know that information.
Yeah. But you get along with the guy?
Yeah, yeah. It's like there's a WhatsApp group chat, and you know they chime in there. Some of them do, some of them don't.
But your dad's here.
Yeah, my dad's here. I'm a caregiver to both of my parents.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm a caregiver. I've been a caregiver for such a long time.
How long?
A long time.
What does that mean?
So my mom has always been kind of ill in one way or another. And then so like in 2013, my mom got like a brain tumor, right?
Yeah.
Maybe 2012, 2013, like somewhere around that. So they couldn't find out what was wrong with her, and they found out it was like, we thought it was cancer. We were like the whole shebang, and it was like meningioma. Hmm. And so they went in there, and
what is that?
So it's like a brain tumor of the brain. There was like a mass on the left hand side.
Yeah.
They went in there, they did surgery. It was like insane, and then you know that greatly impacted my mom's like cognition, movement.
Yeah.
And then over the years, it just complicated things so much. And right now, we're like kind of dealing with like this pretty heavy onset of like dementia. And then years ago, like my dad got colon cancer, and you know, getting treatment, and you know, being the only child was kind of like juggling career, life, and caregiving.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, there was a documentary that ARP Studios. They did a project right after they did a Dinner with Don Rickles.
Yeah.
They took on this project called Care to Laugh.
And AARP?
Yeah, AARP. Yeah, yeah. And they followed me for like a year of like caregiving and doing mics. I'm like, you know, at that time driving up here to do mics and that kind of thing. And also juggling this like heavy stuff, you know. So as I'm doing comedy at night, you know, going back. And then my dad went to Mexico to get treatment.
Yeah.
And I'm left with my mom. So it's like, you know, juggling the gardening business. So it's like, I even said in my special, it's like, I feel like there was a moment in time where it's like, I felt like I lived the American dream backwards, because I went to college, followed my dreams, and then mowed lawns. Yeah, I mean, so it's like, that's life, man. But
What's the special called again?
The special is Stay at Home Son.
Yeah.
It was on Showtime.
Right.
But yeah, the documentary kind of explores that. But yeah, it's like, caregiving has a big part in my comedy. I mean, it's like, that's where I draw from.
The whole definition of who you are.
Yeah. I mean, it comes out of sacrifice. And
you went to high school down there in Long Beach?
Yeah. Yeah, I went to Wilson High School.
And then when did they first start getting sick?
So my mom had like some like knee stuff, like cartilage kind of issues. So that was like high school for me. And then
well, that's just walking thing, right?
Yeah, it's like a walking. They just worked their, like, they've always worked so hard.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like they, you know, their body really aged.
Yeah.
And you know, in their late 50s, 60s, it was already kind of like they were, so now they're like 75, 76, but they're, you know, they've aged quite a bit just because of the work that they've had to do since they were kids.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's like, it's just kind of sad, but interesting that their experience as, you know, Latino Americans is like just that, you know, that one that it almost is not stereotypical, but that he's a gardener and she was a cleaning lady.
Yeah, there's some stereotypes.
But it's just sort of like, you don't, like, that is the experience for so many, you know, immigrant people, that they start at this level.
Right.
You know?
It's also interesting because even though I was born here in Long Beach, born and raised,
yeah,
you know, Spanish was my first language. English, I didn't have full command of the language until maybe fifth grade. As a matter of fact, even in high school, I'm still in ESL ESL English as a second language classes, and I went in and petitioned to get out of it before senior year because I'm like, I'm not learning anything here. It's like I'm rifling through stuff, and it's like there isn't a challenge here for me.
Right.
And then you know having to deal with that, and then going into City College, kind of figuring out the City College deals, like, do I go to college here?
Yeah.
You know, I went to Long Beach City College, and then it's like trying to figure out like higher education, then transferring to Cal State Dominguez Hills. You know, I graduated there with a business degree, and then telling my dad that I'm telling my parents I'm about to be a comic. They're like, man, you have this education, something that we would have killed for, essentially.
Yeah.
You have this great opportunity. We've sacrificed so much.
Yeah.
And you're telling me you're going to go be a clown. It's like, that's a hard pill to swallow. But me knowing that, like, the work ethic, the inheritance that was passed on to me early on from my dad, work ethic, I'm like, trust me, this is going to take a while, but this is going to be a long internship.
And that was before your dad got sick.
That was before my dad got sick. I was mowing lawns with him, like on weekends, you know,
working
doing
that,
comedy at night, or working the store at night on the weekends.
So what was it that, like, you know, what made you decide that that was the way to go? Like, in terms of, you just went to the college just to make sure you had a degree?
I mean, you do what people tell you to do. And also, like, my parents wanted, like, my parents never had any schooling. I think combined, they probably have a second grade education. So I know education is a big thing for me.
Sure.
And so I think I definitely wanted to do it and was told I needed to do it, but also felt in my heart that it was important. Yeah, I mean, to learn those skills. And I wanted to do this and that. And eventually, I, you know, everything clicked. I'm like, I just need to graduate because I want to do comedy.
Well, what made you realize that? When did you realize that?
Just comedy, like that burning desire to do comedy. And it's like,
but who are you watching? What made you think that? Like,
oh man, it's like I've been a fan of comedy. I mean, so again, I don't have command of the language. So my first into comedy was Mexican comedians, Chespirito, you know, who did Chavo del Ocho, and he was such an amazing writer.
Yeah.
The name Chespirito breaks down to Little Shakespeare. He was a tiny guy, and he was such an amazing playwright.
I have no idea what that guy does.
Oh, man, he's amazing. Cantinflas was another one
Cantinflas
for me.
Cantinflas was, that's old-timer.
Yeah, old-timer during Charlie Chaplin days, who Charlie regarded him as one of the funniest comedians ever. La India Maria, which was this indigenous woman.
You were watching Cantinflas?
Yeah, I was watching Cantinflas as a kid, and that was...
Why, because where'd you get it, on video?
Just on TV, and VHS, that kind of stuff.
They have on the Mexican TV, they got repeats and stuff?
Yeah, they would play stuff like on weekends on Univision, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then it's like slowly I started getting into stand-up comedy. Yeah, I mean, I'm
Spanish-speaking?
Yes, a little bit. You know, there was a show called Sábado Gigante, and every so often they would bring in comedians, but they would tell jokey jokes. So-and-so walks into a bar, da-da-da. Street jokes. And I would write them down. I had a whole notebook full of them. But then I started getting into stand-up.
Was your dad a fan, or are you just watching the television and you're just picking up on it?
I was probably like hyper aware to this like comedic stuff because I would see maybe my parents... The only time they would like laugh and that kind of thing. So I think it was one of those core memories where I'm like, everything else is shit.
Yeah.
But right now they're laughing. They like this. So maybe that was like a formative thing.
What's the other guy's name?
So you have Cantinflas, you have Chespirito.
And Chespirito, does he do, he's not stand up?
No, he's not stand up. It was very much like sketches and almost like a sitcom of sorts. There was a kid that lived in a wooden barrel, and his whole goal in life was to get a ham sandwich, and he was very poor, and he lived in a barrel in the middle of this neighborhood, and there was like the single older woman, you know, who the local school professor would go over there, Professor Girafales, and there was a single dad with a daughter, and there were all these characters that had this community. Yeah,
because I don't know, like having not seen it or not understanding the language, it always struck me, what little I saw, I would always sort of think that the Mexican television comedy was very broad, very big, very theatrical.
Yeah, it can be. And there were these like kind of like comedic archetypes that I think people gravitated. I mean, look at Cantinflas. Cantinflas was a street sweeper.
Yeah.
Like he walked around with a trash can on wheels and he would sweep, and he had a red handkerchief. He had like a sailor hat. His pants were sagging. They were ripped. But he was able, like, he went on to do many variations of this character. He was a priest. He was this. So he put himself in these situations, and it was always very nice and endearing. And, you know, that was definitely my formative comedic influences moving into stand-up. Now, as a kid, I'm watching Bobby's World. That's Howie Mandel's thing.
Oh, yeah.
Life with Louis Anderson's cartoon.
Cartoons.
So you start looking at these characters, you're like, oh, they do this thing called stand-up.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, man. So that leads into, oh, Don Rickles, look at this guy.
How old were you when this is happening?
I don't know, like maybe
10, 11 or that kind of thing?
Yeah. Around that age. And now I'm doing a deep dive. I'm watching everything.
Yeah.
Like anything I can get my hands on, you'd have to go to the record store, you know, buy CDs and that kind of stuff. And then, you know, one thing leads to another. Is like Kennison, you know, Bill Hicks.
Where'd you find those guys? How old were you when you found those guys?
Yeah, I was probably like in high school.
School. So you were just a complete comedy nerd at that point.
Comedy nerd.
Digging shit up.
The whole thing. I'm consumed by comedy at that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, and I'm discovering guys like George Lopez, who's sure. like, I literally remember the moment I got kicked out of English class in high school. It was Mrs. Linker's class.
Yeah.
And somebody gave me a bootleg copy of George Lopez's comedy album. And there's a bit in there that he describes the only time we went to Mexico was when a family member was sick. And he goes into the act out. And he's like, get up, my mom's dying. Get up, my mom's dying. And everyone would pack in a van and go down to Mexico. And that made me laugh so hard that I got kicked out of class. They took away my CD player. They took away the CD, which wasn't even mine. It was a bootleg copy, but it wasn't mine.
Yeah.
So I can't give it back to him. I'm like in this, I'm in the hallway, supposed to be thinking about, you know, what I should be doing.
Yeah.
And I'm crying, laughing, still thinking about this bit. And it just resonated with me because we would go to Mexico quite a bit, again, for my mom and dad.
Yeah.
Most every weekend to go see the doctor down there because, one, we didn't have health insurance and it was cheaper down there.
Yeah.
And so every weekend for a long time, I think since middle school into like high school, like 11th grade, we were going every single weekend.
Really?
Yeah, because it's like my mom needed treatment for this or that. My father had needed treatment for this and that. Or if I got sick, we're going to TJ.
Right.
I mean? And so I remember that was like, I think a big kind of marker in comedy for me.
So you would go to TJ to see a doctor and then get prescriptions?
Yeah.
Just right there in the border town.
Yeah, border town and Tecate. I used to spend a lot of time there in a little town called Tecate.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Yeah?
Yeah, a lot of food, restaurants. I remember wandering by myself. It was great. There was a restaurant right in front of this hospital called Hospital Guadalajara. That was the name of the hospital. And right in front of it, there was a restaurant called Los Albañiles, right?
Yeah.
You used to go over there, and for a couple pesos, you get a huge milkshake, which was just banana milk and some chocolate powder.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't tell me nothing, dude. I was like king of the town, dude. It was beautiful.
So that, like hearing George talk about that experience, like connected you. It resonated.
It connected me. And
you knew there was at least, you know, a Latino voice out there.
Yeah, there was a Latino voice. And then you start, you know, discovering, you know, your Dave Attell's and, you know, it's like Mitch Hedberg, Stephen Wright, these one-liner comics, which I became so obsessed with.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Mitch and Wright were like big, Ronnie Dangerfield. I mean, that was huge for me because economy of words, the flip, the derailment of this idea. I mean, that was literally like, I hear people describe heroin and I'm like, Yeah, that's when I discovered Mitch Wright and Dangerfield. That was it for me.
In high school?
Was maybe, high school, telling the high school into college.
Yeah.
And just listening to like Ronnie Dangerfield's 1995 special in Vegas. Like these jokes where it's like,
many.
It's like, my dad, I don't think he likes me. So I asked for a bubble bath. He started boiling water. You know what I mean? It's like, wow, how did he do that? That's like, no magician could ever like wow me in that way, even though I love magic so much. But
you
it's
do?
Like, yeah.
But you know it's a trick.
It's a trick, but it's like you're giving information, you're slow rolling people with information, and then it's not this, it's that. I mean, that's
the turn of phrase thing.
Yeah, derailment, the misdirection, whatever people call it. It's like insane. And then, it's like, and to be able to do comedy at, you know, whatever I bring to the table. Well, but it's great to be able to express myself in that way and also do it in Spanish. Like, be able to tour Mexico and...
Well, when did you first start doing it? Like, how did that happen? What'd you put together to start? Was it Spanish or English?
English.
Yeah.
It was in Long Beach. So I'm 35. I'm about to be 36. So I started when I was 20. That was the first time I ever went on stage.
Yeah.
Local bar in Long Beach, MySpace days. So I see the thing come up. And I was like, oh, man, that's
like comedy night.
Comedy night down the street. I'm 20. I can't get into the bar. I go in.
Yeah.
And the guy running the show, his name's Cochino. I go up to him. I say, hey, you know, can I do some time or whatever? He's like, how old are you? I'm like, 20. And then he's like, yeah, you're not supposed to be here. You know, it's like, we can shut down this bar kind of thing. And I'm like, so if I come back next week, can I go up and do a couple of minutes? He's like, if you can get past the bouncer. I took it at face value. I'm not very bright.
Yeah.
And next week, I just show up. And I'm just kind of waiting it out. I see the bouncer kind of like, I'm picking up on his patterns, you know, doing a little bit of recon. And then I just kind of walk in.
Yeah.
Show starts. I'm in the back. There was a ping pong table there. So I just kind of sat over there.
Yeah.
And then show kind of starts. I don't know how this works. So it's like, once it starts, I go up to him. It's like, hey, so you.
He's hosting?
Yeah. And you know, when he gets off, brings up the first comic, I said, hey, you know, I'm here. You said if I could get past the door guy. He's like, oh, Jesus. He's like, go up there. It gives me like 5 minutes.
Is there
something.
An audience?
Yeah, it was a rough bar, so it was rough around the edges. Character, characters there, and it was a cool bar, but you know, it's like there was an audience there.
Is it comedy night?
Yeah, it's comedy night. It was on a Monday. I remember that.
Oh my god!
And so I go up there. I get 5 minutes.
Yeah,
I mean, I hit him with my fire 3 minutes, which was nothing. I got
one-liners.
I was talking about this. There was a thing that came out on the Press Telegram, the Long Beach newspaper, and they were debating in the editorial about like, so they gave this guy a last meal that was on death row.
Yeah.
You know, they put him in an electrical chair.
Sure.
And his last meal, he asked for like an insane amount of ice cream and, you know, a bunch of other stuff. It was like a whole feast, and they were debating where their tax dollars should go to towards this. So I kind of set it up. Very poorly, and I said if I was in that situation and they asked me what I wanted for my last meal, I would ask for a Red Bull because I heard it gives you wings. Nothing. And that at that point my knees start shaking, I'm like, hands are shaking, like a borderline about to cry.
Yeah.
I try to put the mic back into the stand. It doesn't do it. The mic falls because it's a wireless one. Batteries fly out. I'm like fumbling out of there, and my buddy's recording the whole thing, my buddy Ton Lee. And he's still recording. I'm outside shaking, teary-eyed. He's like, how'd it go up there? I'm like, you saw how I went up there. He's like, turn that thing off. And he has that footage. I want to get my hands on it, but I don't really want to see it because it was so painful. I mean, I'm sweating just even telling you this.
Yeah, I mean, I can feel it.
And it took me a whole year before I got back on stage.
So it has wings. That's from the advertising campaign?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Mark. I didn't mean to bring that caliber of jokes into this podcast.
No, it's all right. I mean, we've all done that. That like it, on the page, it feels clever.
How'd you tell the Red Bull joke? No, I'm playing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just like one of those things where, you know, you're just trying to figure out. I mean, you know, the impulse was correct.
Sure.
Right. You know, because, you know, you were fans of guys who can turn the phrase, you know, and it made sense, but it just wasn't strong enough to take off.
Yeah, not at all.
So you did one joke and that was it?
I did another joke about traffic cones.
Yeah.
It's like, who decides how far away from the hazard they're supposed to be?
Yeah.
You know, it's like you slam into something honking after the fact or something like that.
Yeah.
Being an only child, I probably had like one-liner in there.
Yeah.
And another one-liner about,
You get all fucking work.
7 one-liners and they're like 5 minutes. I'm like, yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
In under 3 minutes, I'm out of there.
Sweating.
The microphone is broke. $800 in damages on my first set. So
you had to pay?
No.
Oh, good.
No.
He just ran out of there.
No, he
never went back for a year.
Never went back. I changed numbers, everything. He wasn't going to get a hold of me.
Okay.
Even if he would have called me the next day, want to come back and try again? Nah.
So what were you thinking for that whole year in terms of comedy? This is your dream and you just fucking ate it and you just couldn't pull it back together to do it again? Now at this point, your parents are sick, both of them?
Yeah. No, my dad wasn't sick yet, but it's like we were dealing with the stuff with my mom. I'm still in college.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I think I'm going to really see this through.
The college?
College, yeah.
Double down on the college.
Double down on the college. I probably bought a new class catalog that day.
Was this before or after you told them you were going to do comedy for your life?
Oh no, that was definitely before.
Okay.
Yeah, you keep those things to yourself, Mark. Yeah, I was like, I'm not
until you're real sure.
Yeah, until you're real sure, and then you just kind of go with the motions. But it was just so so painful.
So when you, after a year, where'd you end up going back to that same place? Did
no,
you feel like you had to go conquer?
I didn't slay the dragon until like years in, so I was able to go back.
Yeah.
And
after a year, though, where'd you go start again?
It was probably at a coffee shop. There was another coffee shop in Long Beach off of Cherry.
Yeah.
That they had an open mic, and then probably like coming down out here to doing different open mics in
And what was different when you went back? Determination.
You think jokes. I would have learned, but I'm like, this Red Bull thing, I think has wings. I think this joke has wings. No pun intended here. But
so a year later, you stuck with the joke.
Yeah, I was like, it won't work with Monster Energy drink. And I think it's an energy specific joke here.
It's so funny that you get locked into this, you know, like this 5 minutes or whatever. Like you just can't let it go. Some guys can't let their material go. You know.
Yeah.
But like when you're starting out, you really believed in it though. I guess that's something. When did you finally, how many times did you do it?
Oh,
I
bombed my first 5 years.
My God.
Yeah. I'm a slow learner, man.
Dude, total bomb?
I'll be very careful in how I say this story, but there was a show that I got booked on to host. I bring my parents out.
In Long Beach?
No, at the Improv in Hollywood.
What was it? What was the show?
It was a show. It was a show. There was a lineup there.
How'd you get booked on that?
The person running this specific show asked me to come out and, you know,
comic run show?
Yeah, it's like one of those bringer type stuff.
Okay, all right.
So it was a bringer show and I come out and...
How many years in is this?
Oh, probably five. This is the fifth year where I'm like, I'm past
the hang of it?
Yeah, I'm past the Red Bull.
You are
mark.
Past the Red Bull?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm up there. I probably have...
Your parents come.
Yeah, my parents come.
Yeah.
And we're in a pickup truck.
Yeah.
So the three of us are sitting in the same thing. You know what I mean? So it's like, this is great. Sparkle in my eyes. Hopes are high.
Yeah.
Parents are like, we're going to see him do this thing he's been telling us about. And so I go there.
It's the worst.
It's the worst, man. It's like... I'm literally sweating, telling you. So we get there.
Yeah.
You know, they check our IDs, my ID or whatever. Yeah. We go in, I check in.
Yeah.
Mom and dad order probably some food or something. They're getting ready.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah. It's exciting.
Show starts. I go up there. I do my...
Did you follow somebody?
No, I'm opening because I'm hosting.
Oh, you're hosting?
Yeah, I'm hosting. And I got my flaming hot... 5 minute set up top just to
open it up.
Yeah, loosen people up.
Yeah.
And so I do that, not good.
Nothing.
Next comic, thank God. So I bring him up and I go up there. Are you guys ready for your next one? I'm just and now I'm like, you know what? I should try some material.
Sure.
I got a minute or two in between. I start doing that. The person who runs the show goes up to me and is like, hey man, I'm gonna take it from here.
What?
I said, you sure? He's like, oh yeah. Yeah. We're gonna take it from here. He's like, I'll host rest of the show. I said, great.
So you had to bring that guy up to and you bring him up that he's going to finish it up?
Yeah. And then, so I go sit down and my dad's like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
I said, they said to come, that they're going to host the rest of it. He's like, yeah, I can see why.
Wow.
He's like, let's get the hell out of here. I'm like, yeah, I think that's a good idea. I would like that. You know, I don't want to ruin this funk.
Yeah.
And let me tell you.
Tough ride home.
Pickup truck, three of us sitting on the same pickup truck bench. I mean, that was brutal. And my dad was like, just focus on school, man. He's like, you got a good thing going over there. And I was like, in my head, I'm like, you don't know my grades. You know, it's like, you don't know how well I'm doing over there either, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a hard thing. So at that point, it's like, do I keep doing this thing? And just like, why am I still doing it? It's like, because I think I'm very hard-headed. It's like I latch on to this thing, same thing for like a joke or a one-liner. It's like I get obsessed with this figuring the thing out, you know, and thank God I did.
Yeah. So after that, like the feeling of disappointing family or loved ones, and they're like, at least your dad didn't even try to be polite in a way.
Oh, that's not something he subscribes to. He's gonna be direct and real at all times.
Yeah, and like, I mean, it's brutal, but I mean, that's really one of those sort of like, you know, that's, it'll teach you whether or not you really have cut out for it or not.
Yeah.
But you just kept going.
You just kept going, and you keep going, And at that point, it's like, that's probably when you find out you're meant to do something, because despite negative feedback from the audience, the people who are judging your your art, your people around you, the people are like, why are you putting yourself through this and you still want to do it?
Yeah. Oh, just stick people with looking it, maybe. At you like,
oh, geez, is that guy again? Oh, he keeps showing up, that guy. It's almost like that character in that movie, A Million Dollar Baby, where
Jay Baruchel's character.
Yeah, the character just keeps getting wailed on, but he keeps showing up. And he pays his gym membership a year in advance. It's like,
and then, the bully finally just trashes him, beats the shit out of him.
Yeah.
To wake him up and go home.
That's it. Just comedy in general, that's what it does to you.
But so 5 years in, this is where it happens. So when do you get the job at the store?
So I worked there for a couple of years. So if I trace it back from September 7, 2012, it's like, it'll be like 2 years.
So, maybe so like you 2 years were already at the store. You were already working at the store.
Maybe it was already at the store. That's when it kind of gets a little foggy.
And what were you doing? Like, what were they letting you do at the store?
3 minutes. So they let you do 3 minutes at potluck.
Yeah.
And back then there was a potluck was Sunday and Monday for us. So I could get 3 minutes on Sunday and Monday as a door guy. At that point, I get to develop my hot 3 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
You get one development spot a week, so you can go into the belly room.
Right.
And you get to do 5 whole minutes.
Yeah.
And that to me was like, so I'm getting, you know, 8, 9, 10. So it's like, yeah, it's like sometimes I would get longer sets in the belly room if it need be. So it's like, at minimum, I'm doing 6 minutes a week at the store, and I'm getting some money for gas to go back and forth.
When do you feel like something clicks, or at least you know you're like, all right, thank God?
I would say, I can tell you what joke gave me confidence.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there was a joke that I had because, you know, before I went all bald, I had a comb over for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, I had a full-on comb over. I mean, this thing was gnarly, and I would spray it on, just make sure it held together, combed it.
Oh, man.
And I would go up there, and I just started talking about it, and that was like, it was an act out. I could flap it, the whole thing, and I think that one really like gave me confidence because it was foolproof. And I can tell you, like, I knew that I had a tough set the night before because I was really selling the comb over. I'm like,
yeah, you hurt your neck.
Yeah, I hurt my neck. The next day I'd be a little sore on my left side. I'm like, oh yeah, that crowd was a little tough, I guess. But yeah, just after a while, you know, one of the comics I'm really like a huge fan of and just blown away by their writing and their as a person, as a comic, it's like Ian Edwards. So it's me watching him, you know, night after night. And
well, he's like a boxer. Like he just, you know,
he's like Mexican boxer. Yeah, it's it'll be 107 and 43. It's like, how do you get that record? You know, but he has no defeats. I mean, he is just so funny. He doesn't miss. He just, and you know, we became good friends and just being able to see him and over the years, like, you know, getting better as a writer, seeing, you know, being a fly on the wall.
I remember when he had dreadlocks.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have that in common. We used to have hair and now we're bald, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
But all right, so it was the comb-over joke that gave you confidence.
Yeah.
Were you, like, I always thought you were kind of, did you ever watch Madrigal?
Yeah, Madrigal, of course, big fan.
Yeah, he's a good comic.
Yeah, he's great.
But he quit. He's done.
Did he quit?
Pretty much.
No.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Have you seen him?
Well, I mean, he's busy with projects, I'm sure, right now.
No, but he's just sort of like, I ain't doing it anymore. It's sort of such a sad thing. But he's just one of those dudes, he's like, I do all this other stuff, and this is where I'm making my living, and that didn't work out. And I can't believe it.
Yeah.
But
the store, I think, you know, being able to see a lot of the big names, you know, as I'm coming up, I'm seeing you, I'm seeing Madrigal, I'm seeing Ian Edwards, I'm seeing, like, a ton of comics, but it's also learning. I mean, that experience of... It's insane
being around it all the time.
Yeah, it's like I remember talking to you a couple times, like you know, parking your car, and then you seeing, you know, me do like a tough set.
All of a sudden it's like, oh, he's doing it. He's a full fledged comic now.
Yeah, and you know your shout out that you.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, when on the podcast you gave me this huge shout out and people are hitting me up. It's like, yo, he's giving you a shout out and some nice words. I'm like, oh. There's things along the way that give you confidence.
Yeah.
It's those things. It's like, I think comedy is great.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of fulfilling things, like from the audience of like, them laughing, applauding. It's like all these cool things. But I think as a comic, we can't kind of move forward without the respect of our peers. And that means so much.
Sure.
You know, it's like comics that I look up to, like yourself and so many others that have been so kind and gracious with their words and, you know,
yeah,
provided me so many opportunities. So it's like, it feels good. It's like,
well, when did you start to feel like you could talk about, you know, your parents and your situation? I mean, because that's sort of, I mean, like, I think it's interesting that the comb over is the first kind of window into realizing, you know, what feels good as a joke, because that's very, it's revealing and it's owning something that's kind of embarrassing. And, you know,
kinda.
But using it,
yeah,
so that opens up the vulnerability. So like after you're able to kind of take ownership of those things that are so fucking embarrassing, mm-hmm, you can kind of do anything. So how do you start to kind of open up and talk about the shit just 5 minutes at a time?
Yeah, so it's like I think the real growth for me was the store being able to have 15 minutes at a time.
When you finally got to be a regular, you mean?
Yeah, when I finally got passed as a paid regular.
When was that?
Yeah, September 7, 2012.
Oh, that was it.
Yeah, that's when I got made a paid regular, and I'm getting 15-minute spots at 1 in the morning, at, you know, 1:30 in the morning,
yeah, yeah,
you know, right before Abrevaya, you know? So
what's
it's like,
Abrevaya, for people who don't know, is the guy who's been doing the last spot at the Comedy Store for like 30 years.
Yeah.
Is he still around? I saw him at the 50th, but I don't see him at the store. I don't hang around that late. I don't even know what that place looks like.
I haven't seen him in a long time. I used to see him when I was there, like late nights, but I haven't seen him in a long time.
When I was there, he used to just go do Carson's monologues.
Yeah.
But,
that's what I remember. But yeah, it was that to me was a big breakthrough.
But being, like, I can't even imagine what, like, I never stay there much past 11:30 ever. So like at 1 in the morning, it must be what, scattered? Like people, like 10, 15 people?
10, 15. No, it's single digits. Mark. I mean,
sorry, it's been a long time. Yeah.
So your slow nights in the golden era of comedy when you came up was 10, 15 people? Man, that's great. That's
No, but I wasn't. Like I didn't do that at the store. I did that shit in New York.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
It was 9 people at the beginning of the show.
Oh,
and
that's
then
great.
And then it stayed 9 people.
That would have felt like Madison Square Garden to me. 9 people?
Come on.
In the OR? Yeah. Come on. Well, there was 2 people. There was like 1 person, 2 people. It was like that kind of
thing. Was that during the downtime? Was it the dark period?
Yeah, it was a dark period.
No one was going.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that room was clearing out. It's like, as a matter of fact, there'd be times where it'd be just like 1 person that's just asleep. You know, yeah, close this tab, just stay there. You're just kind of like dozing off drunk. And you're basically playing to your peers, the person working the cover booth.
Right.
Or the lot guy that happened to come in and sat down and watched you.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's a writing session. Hey, try that again. What if you said this? It's like at that point, it's like, yeah, I'll hold the mic and you give me
tags.
But
was that when no one was going to the store in general? Like the shows weren't that popular? Like sometimes they'd cancel shows in the OR?
I was around the time. So this is like, it started picking up when I became a paid regular. But when I'm a door guy, the main room is not working. It only works on Saturdays.
Right.
So that thing is shut down. And then when I became a paid regular, I saw outside promoters start going into that room and bringing life to it, you know, during the week. But yeah, it was.
Was that Fat Tuesdays?
Tripping on Tuesdays was Tuesdays.
Yeah.
You know, so Tuesday and Sunday were the only spots that I was seeing the room be used for.
Yeah,
other
than
that, it's like, and then, you know, over the years to see that there would be like 2 showings in the main room, that's bonkers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's because I saw it when it was dead.
Well, now it's kind of crazy, huh?
Yeah.
But even then, like, you mean when Joe and what's his name? Mencia and everybody. And like, was that, well, you were there during that?
No, I wasn't there during that. I was there when Joe Rogan and Joey Diaz came back. Like around that time,
okay,
it's like when I saw it, I remember them coming back and the place was just bumping. I mean, it was like sold out main rooms and sold out ORs. And it's like, wow, it's like, it was really cool to see kind of like this.
So the 15 minutes of performing for nobody give you the confidence to kind of start pulling it together.
Yeah, you start
talking about yourself.
Yeah, you forge this kind of steel. You know, you're hammering away at this red hot steel before it, like, this kind of like pocket of creativity cools.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, I'm gonna go talk about this, like my mom wearing diapers. I'm gonna go talk about my dad getting cancer and being in denial. You know, it's like, and that's if you're going to present something like that, it better be at 1:30 in the morning in a pitch dark room with a couple people. And if you can get some, if you can hear some chuckles and that kind of thing, I'm like, oh, I'm onto something here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and then you go perform that elsewhere and maybe they're not into it, but it's like, that's the kind of material that I was, I later started doing as a paid regular. And to be able to, so even as I'm doing my special, I'm not really on the road. I'm not headlining. I'm not doing weekends.
Really?
No, it's like I got a couple weekends leading up to it, but I pieced the whole hour off of 4 15-minute sets.
Huh.
I'm rotating them as I get the spots. And then it's like, that's when I would get one-niners. Huh. Yeah, it's like one-niners. I would go in and try to like
do piece the 45? Them together.
Yeah. No, I would do the whole hour. It was 4 15s.
Oh, wow. So yeah. That's how you were working it at the store?
That's how I was working it at the store. And then once I got the...
Where'd you finally get then, like, where'd you get the hours? You had to run the whole hours.
Yeah, it's like getting close to is when I finally got, you know, an agent, and I started getting like...
What year is this?
So I filmed my special November 2nd, 2019.
Wow. So you weren't headlining.
Not complete weekends.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just one-nighters or stuff like that.
Wow.
So at that point, once I'm on the road leading up to, like, say, the last 6 months leading up to the thing, it's like I'm having some scattered weekends, like some fallout spots, some one-nighters, that kind of stuff. So at that point, it's like the 4 15-minute sets became breaking stuff up in thirds. So.
That's hard, man, to just sort of be like, all right, well, this, like, especially at the store where you're like, this is this 15 minutes, this is this 15 minutes, because it's so easy to get stuck in a habit there.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you just want to do the shit that works, maybe throw a couple new ones in the middle.
Right.
But you're just sort of like, no, tomorrow I got to work on this total other one.
I would trick myself into thinking, is like, imagine I started comedy right now.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the Red Bull banger that I had before.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is what I have right now. So I would go up and trick myself to do that only 15 minutes. And then some weeks I would just do that same 15 over and over again, working out a joke or whatever. Right. But it was me tricking myself into it. And then later.
And they're long form too, right? I mean, sometimes it's just two or three stories, right?
Yeah, two or three stories. Yeah. So by the time I got to the special, I had mapped everything out. I would love to show you that picture afterward, but it's like I mapped everything out. So what helped me doing 4 15-minute sets, what really helped me was callbacks. I got to have a callback from here to here.
Sure.
It was like.
Callbacks are like, they're the greatest.
Oh, yes, they are. They're
makes audiences just like, oh my god!
I know, it's like this kind of smoke thing, and the dove flies out of your hands, and you're like, I got another one going.
Yeah, so you're gonna love the next ones. Four birds come out of it. Yeah,
and at that point, it's like I remember kind of weaving. At that point, I got away from the 4 15s. Once I'm doing like weekends.
Yeah,
and I said I'm gonna do 3 20s. So a beginning, middle, and end.
Uh-huh. And so, then now, do you headline now, or what do you?
Yeah, doing? Yeah, man. Okay. I'm loving it. I'm going on the road. I was just in Philly. I'm going to Jacksonville, Florida this weekend. I got Brea at the end. So it's like I'm loving it.
So this is like, it's so wild how you put it together, because you didn't do it you didn't go from open. You didn't do feature acts.
Yeah, no, I was featuring.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, I was featuring. I've been opening and featuring for so long, but I never had the headlining weekends. You see what I'm saying?
And then Paulie took you out. Who else took you out?
Yeah, I went on the road with Paulie, Trevino, Russell Peters, Steve Byrne.
Yeah.
A ton of people have been. Steve Renazzisi.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so many. I hate to list everybody.
Well, that's the big benefit of the store is that I think you can go work out, but that someone will be like, let's just go do some dates.
Yeah,
you can do the work. You can do the real job.
Yeah,
as opposed to just being one of those rooms over there.
Yeah, and I hate to name everybody just because I feel like I'm going to leave somebody out, but it's like the store. You're 100,000% right. It's like you build rapport with these comics that later is like, wait, I need somebody open.
You ready?
You ready? Yeah, I'll get somebody to cover my shift, and I'll see you there. And then you're there an hour before they show up in the green room, ready to go.
When did you start working in Spanish?
That happened a couple years ago. So that actually happened when I took my mom to go do like a. To go see the Virgin Mary in Mexico City.
The Virgin Mary was there?
Yeah, one, not the real one.
No.
we went to the cathedral in Mexico City, and so I was going to take her there because she was going to have that surgery, that brain surgery. Yeah. So it was kind of like And Jewish culture, they call it a mitzvah.
Kind of
like a trip.
Yeah.
And so I was taking my mom on this trip and, you know, make sure everything was in order. So I took him down there, and that's kind of, I think even a little before that, I had tried it out here, but I did it in Mexico City at this spot called a Shakespeare Forum.
Uh-huh.
And it was great. And it was fun.
You just did your regular act?
Yeah, I translated stuff, and then that was another learning moment for me, because you realize some similes and metaphors and wordplay, double entendres are different. You have a different set of double entendres and puns to work with.
Right.
So things weren't working. I had to pivot, adjust. So it's like it felt like I started all over again.
Huh.
Like I felt like I was in the back, like in that pickup truck.
But you know
home.
The language. It's your first language. So,
well, my dad would say is like you're going to end up mute because you can't speak Spanish or English well. It's like eventually you're in this purgatory of language.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you lose kind of this and you gain that, and vice versa. So I come to find out that I'm fluent in Spanish, but not Mexico City Spanish, you know.
Oh, okay.
So it's like that was a realization, and then me working on it and performing. And it worked then, but I would say that I'm a lot better now than I was then. Like this past weekend, actually. No, I was in Oxnard this weekend, so I did the weekend, four shows. Friday and Saturday shows were in English. But
the
Sunday
Improv?
At the Improv, Levity Live here in Oxnard. The Sunday show was in Spanish.
Uh-huh.
And I was able to do...
How many people come out? Did you sell it out?
The English ones were like, it's the first time where I'm like, oh, wow, like people are coming out, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But the Spanish one, it's kind of new. It's a new thing. So
sure.
It's kind of hard to reach kind of the Spanish-speaking demographic because maybe they're not plugged into
the
emailing list.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. But, you know, people did come out and be able to do an hour in Spanish. And it's like a hybrid of like the old hour and the new hour and just being in the moment. Like, I have command of the language now where I'm like, hey, I could talk to this audience member, maybe a little bit of crowd work. That sets up another joke. But it's a nice place.
You're becoming proficient in Spanish with it.
Comedy, yeah.
So like Esparza does that too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Segura does it.
Absolutely.
Huh.
Yeah, so Tom Segura and like we used to, like we put on this show at the Improv in the little lab.
Yeah.
It was like Francisco Ramos, Fabricio Copano and I.
Yeah.
And we, you know, it's like the room holds 20 people.
Yeah.
And Tom Segura and Felipe were kind enough to come do the show a couple of times and, you know, kind of jam out. So it was cool. It's kind of like doing comedy in Spanish just feels like a basketball player, like working on your left.
Yeah.
It's like, you got to work on that. You know, it feels good.
Right.
You know, to be able to sink those baskets with your left.
But, yeah.
You know, English is my... Like, I think in English now.
You know,
it's like my dominant.
But I mean, just on a business level, you know, if you can build out the Spanish market for yourself, I mean, fuck, dude, it's a whole other world and there's, you know, thousands of people.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, LA's Spanish, man.
Yeah. I mean, Texas, Arizona, there's all these beautiful markets, Miami. But going to Mexico, it's like I see the Mexican comedians right now killing it.
Yeah.
And it's like stand-up comedy as we know it here in the States, it's still a very, like, early young art form in Mexico. I think roughly the eldest comic in Mexico is like 10 years into comedy.
Yeah.
You know, and they're putting out specials, you know, year after year.
It's like totally new there.
It's a gold rush right now.
Yeah.
You know, people are rushing into premises.
Are you going to go shoot a special in Mexico?
Yeah. So I'm going to go shoot it this year. So I have the first hour that I translated. The dream would be to sell a double special of like Spanish and English for every hour here on out. Like much like a book, you know.
Esparza does that?
Yeah, Esparza did that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was great. And that has... You know, for a long time, been my dream of like, if I could do that.
How do your parents feel now about your choices?
My dad still reminds me of this job where I wore a tie. And I said, you know, I sold clothes at Robinson's May.
Yeah.
It was a department store.
Uh-huh.
He's like, but you wore a tie.
Yeah.
You know? So my dad still hints at it. My mom's like...
Hints at what? He wants you to wear a tie or he wants you to not be a comedian?
Not be a comedian. He's like, man, it's like, I don't know, like... He's like, there's an easier way to do this, man.
To do life?
To do life, to kind of... I think what it comes down to, it's like, I think parents don't want you to suffer or have the same path of resistance that they did. So I think they want to lessen that, but it's like, you know, it's like, if only they could really comprehend that I'm happy doing this and I want to do it for the rest of my life. And
yeah.
If it's all, when it's all said and done, if I could just put out special after special, it's like...
Yeah, man. And
I'm
you
good.
Keep writing new, like even last night when I saw you. What's your girlfriend's name?
Adria.
Yeah, she's great.
Thank you.
It seems like she's on board.
Very supportive, absolutely.
For the full ride.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, how long has that been going on?
A couple years. It's,
all right.
Yeah, a few years, actually.
Because like I just know like you came out, because I know with that audience last night, it was a little chaotic. It was a little chaotic.
I did
both rooms. Like I wasn't even booked in the main room, but Ross didn't show up till late. So I went on, but it was just one of those nights where it was like, you know, they weren't bad, but they were just sort of distracted or something. And it was just, you could just feel that weird, a little bit of chaos in the room, you know? But you could focus on, you got enough people laughing to where you know, it could sustain your set and not just be like, no, I want to fucking leave my body. But I mean, I saw you come out, you know, and you're like, it was great. I'm like, was it though? Was it great?
I was very honest. I said, for what I'm trying to do, yes.
Exactly.
Because I'm doing new premises and I wasn't fazed by the lack of laughter or, you know, just whatever little pops I got with the thing I'm working on. It's like, that was great.
Well, when you're doing the new ship, which is great, you know, like when you finally, because I'm like at that point now, like I don't know where this, a lot of this material I'm doing now came from. Like I'm doing these 2-hour shows and, you know, some of it, but some of it's not going to stick, you know, and some of it will, but there's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah.
But I realize like there's things I need to talk about and, you know, I have to consciously kind of like, all right, well, figure out, you know, what you want to say, you know, and just get it out there. Like, and you know that weird feeling, like there's an excitement to doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and when it fucking tanks, you're just sort of like, well, how committed am I to this? But the thing you start to realize, it's like, well, if I believe in it, I got to make it work.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing, you know, you don't really talk about to yourself, which is like, things can tank, but like, if you have faith in it and you keep tweaking shit, and it'll eventually come to life.
Right.
But you know, there's a lot of things that I do impulsively and I get big laughs and I forget. But like when you really focus on something and then you sort of go and you make it work, like the only problem with that thing is like, you know, once it's really working, I'm like, no, that's done. Do you know, like, you know.
It's so
like,
funny. We do put a kind of a expiration thing. It's like, all right, that's done.
Yeah. And like either you keep doing it or you just sort of like, that was a good challenge.
Right.
Yeah. And then it just goes away. So the new shit's kind of working?
Yeah. I think the new stuff is working. Talking about my mom wanting a new walker.
Uh-huh.
That feels good.
It's something that's all relatable shit too. I'm finding, you know, talking about grief and my dad's Alzheimer's and shit. It's like, that's where it's at, dude. Like in some ways, because like all that kind of stuff, like kind of shouldering, you know, the real challenges of life and, you know, people you love, you know, getting sick or, you know, or you getting sick or losing people. It's like, what else is there really?
Right.
How much can you talk about the fucking Kardashians or, you know, Amber Heard or whatever the fuck her name is, you know?
So how do you kind of challenge yourself or like to talk about things that maybe seem a little too vulnerable, like when you start talking about your father?
Yeah, it's hard. Well, you know, usually it starts like a pretty you know, cynical, kind of dark, you know, and then I feel it out. You know, like there's a beat that I'm doing that's just never, like occasionally it'll get the big laugh and I can't determine what makes it happen or what doesn't. You know, but it's a matter of like, you know, rising above the sadness of it. It's delicate. Because what you're talking about is sad as fuck. So like you better have a good relief valve in there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's the challenge, I think, of those jokes. It's like, I'm just, you know, it's like from the get-go, this is sad shit, but I've got this little twist that's going to turn it around and relieve you of that sadness, literally, you know?
Right.
You can feel it. Who the fuck knows what makes it happen? I'll stick with shit that's sad, doesn't go anywhere. I'm doing a thing on stage, it's horrendous.
Yeah.
It's horrendous, and it's unnecessary. Because I'm literally saying, I don't know if you watched it, but I'm saying like, I don't know what we're supposed to be doing as comics.
Yeah.
Like, I can't just entertain you. The weight of the world is on all of us, and we know what's going on. It's horrendous. So I say, the metaphor I'm sort of working with as what our job is you know when someone's sick and dying in the hospital? Yeah. And they're going to die. There's no, you know what they hear from everybody they know in the weeks leading up to them dying? You're going to get through this, man. You're strong. You're going to do it. You don't worry about it. You're going to kick this thing. That's the comedian's job, right?
Yeah. Just kind of hold a hand and just...
Of the world.
Of the world,
it's like, you know, but it's the, like, again, it's not funny, but for some reason I think it should be. So I don't know.
I think it's great. And then certain premises, it's like... I really believe in this thing called stand-up comedy. It's art, you know, and sometimes you just have to do it for the sake of just doing it. I feel like it's such a, like a imprint, and like being able to get that out. And yeah, certain jokes aren't funny, you know, but they're still jokes.
Yeah.
You know, there's, you know, it comes out as a certain way. And I don't know, comics, we're so twisted in our minds that sometimes you say something, you're like, oh, that's not going to be like good. It's not going to sit well with me tonight or tomorrow. I'm be thinking like, why did I say that?
Yeah.
That could have been this. It's like, am I being disrespectful?
For a year, man. The Red Bull for a year.
I tried it last night, actually, Mark. That's why I said it was great for what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to bring back this Red Bull wing thing.
Dude, I hate fucking, like, I felt it the other night, man, when you're on stage and you get that sweat on the back of your neck.
Ooh.
And you're
like,
oh, man.
Those two beads just racing down the vertebrae.
Yeah.
Of, like, the little spinal cord canal.
You don't have no control over it, but it happens when you got to work.
You're up there and you just kind of like lean forward. You just feel the elastic of your boxers snap down.
Because it's like, this ain't landing. It's not landing. And that still happens, you know. And I get off and I'm like, fuck. God, they just saw the sadness.
Yeah. There was a premise that I tried to tackle that was just like, I think I'm not. Yeah. It's like, so the idea was that, like, you know, my mom's health is bad, but my parents are not married. My dad is now able to, marry. So my dad comes to me, he's like, you can't make this shit up. He's like, hey, I've been thinking of marrying your mom. And I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
And he got really upset because I'm like, I don't know, you know, take her out for coffee or something, you know. And then he's like, hey, I'm being freaking real right now, dude. He's like, yeah. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. And then your it's such a weird, touchy thing for me. But at the same time, like, the comedic mind to kind of let the comedy in these painful, vulnerable moments.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, start thinking of the premises, like, well, who's going to have to marry him? You know, like, my parents don't speak or read English.
Yeah.
I'm going to be officiating the thing. It's like going into like these hypothetical premises. You know, my mom is hard of hearing.
Yeah.
Mom, do you take that? And it's like, that's what relieves the pain, I think. And presenting that on stage is like just like you said, it's like, ah, shit, the audience saw the sadness in there.
Yeah. I gotta tweak that a little bit.
Yeah, it's not ready. Let's just let that brew a little bit.
Just coming out sad. Yeah. Well, it's all right, man. It's like, that's the real risk of it. You know, if you're just doing jokes that are just jokes and you're just doing them like math problems, you can just reel them off. They're like, well, that would they like. But when you, like, because I go all in all the time, and you do that too, where you just put your heart into it. So when they don't work, you're like, it's not just sort of like the embarrassment of a joke not working. It's like, oh my God, it's got a little heartbreak. Got a little heartbreak there. Right?
Yeah.
It's all right. We're tough. Good talking to you, man.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, Jesus Trejo, go see him if he's coming to your town, and you can also watch him on his Tacos Con Todo show. Here's a messy guitar riff that I tried to pull together, and I kind of fucked it up here and there, but I rolled with it. I rolled with it. I rolled with the mud and the sludge. Cat Angels everywhere.